It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, the Des Moines Metro Opera is starting its 45th season in a unique way, performing the opera Soldier Songs at Camp Dodge. We'll find out more about that later on. But first, the new documentary, The Barn Raisers, from Fourth Wall Films, showcases an important part of our heritage that's often overlooked and easy to take for granted. Barns, of course, and the people who built them. The documentary will premiere at the Putnam Museum in Davenport on Saturday evening. And with me now are Kelly and Tammy Rundle, the filmmakers behind the documentary. Welcome back, Rundles.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And Kelly, I'll start with you. Where did the idea for this documentary come from?
The documentary is really a companion to our 2010 film, Country School, One Room, One Nation. And in the course of interviewing for that film, we talked to Dr. Jerry Apps. And at the conclusion of that interview, he said, you know, barns would be a great topic for a documentary. So both of my parents grew up on dairy farms in Wisconsin, and I grew up exploring my grandfather's barn, a barn that was built by my great-grandfather in the 1920s. So I had a much, you know, sort of deeper connection, I think, to this barn story, and sort of reliving all those childhood memories as we shot footage over the last 3 years.
Now, you showcase barns in the documentary in Iowa, but all over the Midwest, really. How did you decide what barns you were going to focus on? There are a lot of barns out there.
There are. And the selection of the barns, well, by state, had to do with humanities grant funding and other kinds of grant funding. So we returned, as we did in the Country School film, to Iowa, Kansas, and Wisconsin. But then we were able to add Ohio, and then finally at the end of the process, Michigan. And then within those states, it has to do with sort of what we selected in terms of just the great stories that we would discover along the way. Can't tell all the stories, and that's why we get to include some of those on the DVD, you know, the extra stories that we weren't able to include. But it really was just, I guess it's just an aesthetic choice, you know, what to include and the variety of barns to show the variety.
So you were showing barns, but also, given the title of the documentary, The Barn Raisers, this is also a little bit about the people who built these barns. And it's hard to know who built these barns. So what are you trying to help us understand about these buildings that so many of us drive past without giving them a second thought?
Well, I told a preview audience the other day that the film was not about barns. And there was a little bit of a gasp.
But Did we come to the wrong place?
Well, I think it's in the same way that the Country School film isn't about the buildings. It's more about how people interacted with those buildings. In this case, we decided it'd be fun to look at barns through the lens of architecture and what does that tell us about when the barn was built, what it was built for, and then who were these builders? And I guess what we discovered along the way is it's a little bit mysterious who they were. There's not a lot of ephemera connected to who built barns.
Now, I want to, before we move into the architecture and who built these barns, how they were able to build these barns, I want to touch on a little bit of just our love for these barns. And I want to play a clip from the documentary, The Barn Raisers. And this is Denny Good of Oakdale Farm in Ogden, Iowa.
We are on what was known as the C.G. Good Farm. And this is the home of Farscher. Farscher was a Belgian stallion. He won the honor of world's champion in 1915 and then was retired from the show ring. In October of 1918, my great-grandfather gave $47,500 for Farscher. He is considered one of the foundation sires of the breed. This barn was built after the purchase of the stallion Farscher. Its sole purpose was to house Belgian stallions on this breeding farm. That horse passed away of colic on Christmas Eve of 1923. He died here in this stall and was buried in this stall. He is buried standing up. in European tradition. We went into a great deal of discussion on whether we should preserve the barn, not just because of Farsher, but I look at my great-grandfather. He worked here. My grandfather worked here. My dad grew up here. Now myself, my son Josh, the future. So it is a very special place, very sacred place in my mind.
That's Denny Good in a moment from the documentary The Barn Raisers from Fourth Wall Films. And that's a farm right outside of Ogden, Iowa, where they raise incredibly beautiful horses. And Tammy, as you guys were making the film, were you surprised at all by the emotional depth that you got to when you started talking to people about their barns?
I absolutely was surprised by that. I'm a city girl, so I don't have a connection to barns or farms or anything like that. And when Kelly talked about doing the project, I was like, okay, we'll give this a shot. But as is often the case with our documentary subjects, I caught the bug. And probably the most inspirational and wonderful part of the project was hearing these stories. And that really is the soul of the film. That is what brings these barns to life again. You hear the stories and the connections of these families with those icons. And, you know, they're very passionate about it. And it's not easy to keep a barn alive. It's not easy to keep it going and preserved. It's a lot of cost and a lot of time and a lot of effort. So I would say yes. For this project, the most surprising thing was absolutely hearing how passionate and emotional it was for them.
Well, let's start talking a little bit about the people who did build these barns. I want to bring a couple more people into this conversation. Rudy Christian is here with us on the line. He is the founding president of Friends of Ohio Barns, and president of Christian & Son Incorporated, a traditional timber frame building company. He's featured in the documentary, of course. Hello, Rudy.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, no problem.
And as someone who builds traditional barns in 2017, how did you get involved in doing this?
Actually, we began building houses in the same style, which is referred to as timber framing. And basically what that means is instead of building with small pieces of lumber the way most wood frame buildings are built today, it's called stick framing, built buildings that are built with large hunks of timber that are basically the center of trees, which are connected together with wooden joinery and then pinned together with wooden pegs. And so we began in the business of building houses that way. And in 1994, the big barn at Malabar Farms burned to the ground. And we had been taking an interest in historic barns, but we really didn't know much about them. And long story short, we ended up being in a position where we were asked to rebuild the timber frame for the barn at Malabar Farms. And the research that we did in studying what that barn was and how it was built and understanding through all of the pictures that people had provided for us from the years and years of visiting the barn, we began to realize that historic timber framing was a whole other world that we could really just devote our lives to. And so we've really focused on that now, and that's what we enjoy doing, is learning as much as we can about the old ways of building and bringing them to life again today.
You found that you had a much stronger connection to building barns than you did to building houses. Can you explain that?
Well, as it turns out, the way that a barn is built, the way that occurs, is something that many people don't understand today because we don't get together as communities. And when we ended up doing that work for Malabar Farms, my wife, Laura, suggested that maybe we should consider inviting the public to come to the raising of the barn. And barn raisings aren't something that people are familiar with today. But it used to be that whenever you raised a barn, you could build the barn with just a handful of people. But when it came time to actually put the building up, that's when the community came and became involved. And so we opened it up to the public and decided to invite them. And as it turns out, over 50,000 people came to watch us raise that barn.
50,000? Could 50,000 people even see you raise that barn?
Yeah. And so what we realized is there was a much deeper connection. And then Laura and I both started thinking about it and talking about it and realized, you know, one of the things that we love about barns is, like Kelly was talking about, when we were kids, we spent so much time in barns that were part of our family, that were part of our community, that we realized just how important a part of that was and how tangible barns connect us to our past.
In coming to this after being a house builder, did you have to do a lot of research to learn about barns? I mean, how did you learn about barns and then how to build them?
Well, one of the things that I really love about barns is that they really do represent the statement that old buildings are actually books. You just have to learn how to read them. And so the problem, as again Kelly did mention, is the fact that there really aren't very many connections to the old builders. Now, there's no books about them. There's no books about old barns. But the answer to the question of how is a barn built is in the barn itself. And so as we began to study barns and we began to work with people to save barns and to move barns, every single barn that we have walked into since has taught us a little bit more about the way that the barn builders executed their craft.
And you can learn that without taking the barn apart.
Yes, absolutely. You can walk into a barn and you can find the marks that were made with the awl on the timbers that show exactly where the layouts are supposed to be to cut the mortises and the tenons. You can find the marks for where the peg holes are supposed to go. You can even find on the older barns marks that were where they would place their level so that each time they rolled the timber over to do work on it, when they put it back into position, they could set the level in exactly the same place and make sure that timber was going to stay square and plumb while they were doing their work.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. My guest right now, Rudy Christian. He is a traditional timber frame builder. Also with me, Kelly and Tammy Rundle, the filmmakers behind the new documentary, The Barn Racers. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about barns. The new documentary, The Barn Raisers, from Fourth Wall Films, tells us about barns and the people who built them. The documentary will premiere at the Putnam Museum in Davenport on Saturday evening. Kelly and Tammy Rundle are the filmmakers behind the documentary. They are here with me. Also, Rudy Christian is on the line from Ohio. He's founding president of Friends of Ohio Barns, a barn preservationist and a barn builder himself. And also with us is Marlon Ingalls. He's an architectural historian and archaeologist with the Office of the State Archaeologist in Iowa. And we were just talking before the break, Rudy was talking about how all of the information you need about the barn is there in the barn, although we don't have information necessarily about the people who built these barns. People didn't put their name on them. There weren't well-known, or at least I don't think there were well-known barn architects. Marlon, what do we know about the people who designed and built these barns?
Well, there were a couple different ways to look at it. I have been in a number of barns that the owner was proudly stated his name on the side of the building on the inside or someplace like that. There's the historic ownership records. And then I also found out that in the earlier days, the more pioneer days, that there were crews of young guys or men who would travel and walk down the roads and ask you if you needed a barn. And if you did need a barn, they would put it up for you. And so they were kind of itinerant woodsmen, axemen, workers that really were specialists in constructing these kinds of buildings. And they do have a template to them. They do have origins, maybe archetypes from other parts of the country or the old world, but at the same time, Each one was new, and each one was designed for the owner's needs. And its placement and orientation and capacity was very much decided by what was needed on that particular farm.
So would there have been plans before they started building that barn?
There were plans in the sense that barns are frequently made of three bays or three bents, these timber-framed elements that make up the roof supports and the wall supports. They could go three bay or four bay or five. There was barns that were obviously designed for dairy production or stock production, that other barns that were heavy on having granaries. And some barns actually had housing units in them for the help and, a number of elements like that, which were passed down, I think, through families and kind of a system of learning a trade.
So this was knowledge that was passed down from generation to generation or from person to person, but there weren't blueprints.
The number of barn blueprints from the early 19th century through the last quarter of the 19th century are very few and far between. And they're very kind of stick-like things, very basic.
The building, as it was being built, are there signs that barn builders would have had to do a little bit of a jerry-rigging to get the thing to come together, since they weren't necessarily working with really precise plans?
It wasn't about the plans on paper. The plans were in their head, and they had worked it out with a carpenter's square and the tools they had on hand and the experience. And the bent sizes and certain sizes of timbers were kind of standardized. And you can see on the materials that they were cut very precisely, and in the hand-hewn barns, the craftsmanship is beautiful, and they could take a log and hew it down and level it up and straighten it out and drill it and put it in place, and very seldom did they have to redo it.
Rudy, when you walk into a barn, and you mentioned that all of the information that you need is there in the barns, how do you gather that information? When you walk into a barn, what do you look for?
Well, I like to do what I refer to as put myself into the boots of the builder. So I look at the barn from the perspective of what was he seeing in his mind when it was time for him to put that barn up, to erect that barn. And yes, he did have standard ways of looking at it. He also had rules that he used. When people came here from Europe and were building barns, they started by using the rules that were established in Europe to build barns, and that was called scribe rule. And they would actually use a pair of dividers, and they would scribe the shape of one timber to the next and match them up and fit them, which was very, very time-consuming. In the United States, not long after we got here and started building and settling the country, we came up with a new system of doing that that's called square rule, and it is much, much simpler, much, much less labor-intensive. And you can see that by looking at the joinery. If it's scribe rule, each of the joints will have a mark that looks similar to a Roman numeral next to it, and you know that that's built in the European tradition. And if those marks are not there, and there are things called housings that I don't have time to describe on the timbers, you can tell that that's square rule. So it's definitely an American ingenuity, the result of American ingenuity, that the barns are now being built in a different way that takes less labor and less work. And you can read that by simply walking in and looking at the barn.
Now, Marlon, when you look around at barns in the state of Iowa, what do you see about our heritage by looking at the different kinds of barns?
The first thing I look for is what period of time was it built? Is it like in Iowa's early colonial territorial time, where you're going to see different kinds of barns than you would see later on, say, even in the mid-19th century, the hewn timber barns, log barns, ethnic barns, all right, German and English and Swedish and Norwegian, and then barns built for different cropping systems and what they needed to house. Were they housing horses or cattle? Or is it sheep farms? Are they Are they going to have granaries in them with oats and or wheat? And all these things evolved and changed over time. Certainly they were housing their implements besides their animals, and they would have their buggies and carts and maybe even sleds and sleighs for the wintertime in those places, and I've seen such things.
Now, when I think about the barns that really strike me as someone who just lives in Iowa, there are a few unique barns around. There was one near my home when I was growing up that was a stone barn, and round barns are so striking, octagonal barns, that kind of thing. But Kelly, when you were looking for barns to feature, did you try to find a variety of shapes?
We did find a variety of shapes, and also maybe one thing we haven't talked about is that the materials used to create the barn really reflect what's at hand. And that was true when we did the country school film as well. So while you see most barns are created primarily of timber, perhaps, my grandfather's barn, for example, the foundation was a field stone foundation because, my gosh, he had a field that would produce
stones
every spring.
Right.
You know, so that was used. You would use the timber in general that it was at hand, perhaps on your property or adjacent property. And if there was a brickyard nearby and that was a resource that was available, maybe it was a brick building that were done later on. So yeah, we did look for that. And I guess I was kind of also taken by the round barns, as so many people are. One of our interviewees described them as the sexy barn, you know, and they are. They probably get preserved at a higher rate because they're so unusual.
Absolutely. Do they last as well as the other barns? I mean, that's a huge roof. And I remember there was a round barn, again, near when I grew up, that the roof caved in when I was a kid. And so I think about that. Do they last as long?
I think it depends on maintenance. And some of the ones we were in, the round barns were kind of spiraling down, the roof was, and that does tend to be something that happens with those. But I'm not an expert on that, but that's what we saw as we were in those barns.
We're talking about the new documentary, The Barn Raisers, from Fourth Wall Films. With me are filmmakers Kelly and Tammy Rundle. Marlon Ingalls is here. He's an architectural historian and archaeologist. And Rudy Christian is also on the line. He is a barn builder and a barn preservationist and the founding president of Friends of Ohio Barns. And you're welcome to join the conversation as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we've got Gary on the line and coming. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I'm really enjoying your show. Well, you know, I called originally, and I was telling my grandfather used to travel when he was a kid from town to town, and they would buy horse and buggy, and in the back of the horse and buggy they had a large model of a, I was thinking it was a barn, and I apologize, but it wasn't. It was a grain elevator. It was a model of a grain elevator. But they would actually, and it was made out of lumber, and it was about 4 feet wide by 5 feet long. We actually donated it to the Iowa Historical Society when my grandfather died. But they would go from town to from farm to farm when my grandfather was a kid, and they would have a elevator raising, I guess, and they would build. You know, they would get all the neighbors together, and they would actually stay at the farmer's house, and then they would get all the neighbors together. They would finish what I thought was a barn, but it was an elevator, and I apologize.
A very necessary piece of equipment, definitely.
Yeah, but I was wondering if maybe that same concept was utilized, with respect to barns. I was wondering if Rudy maybe had some input on that, if they used I was thinking it was a barn. It was a grain elevator now. But like I said, we donated it to the historical
society. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And I just was intrigued by the whole. I want to make sure I watch your film. But,
yeah, well, let's let Rudy respond to that. Rudy?
Well, I don't know that I've ever seen an actual barn model, you know, a salesman's type model of a barn that was used for that. But I think that the reality was that people who wanted to have a barn built typically already had a pretty good idea of what a barn looked like. And the reason for that was, as has been said earlier in your show, that there was a standardization of how we built barns that was really based on very, very historic patterns. And so I think that what was more the case was that when someone would come, the crews that were out building barns, the barn raisers, would come to a farm and meet with the farmer and talk about where he wanted to build that barn, that what was really important was to understand what kind of a barn he wanted to have built. Did he want to have a barn that sat right down on the ground, which is referred to as a ground barn, or did he want to have a bank barn where you'll see a bank coming up to one side so you can actually pull your equipment up onto the second floor and have your animals on the first floor? Did he want to have a round barn? Did he need a hay barn? And so I think that the models were the barns themselves.
Well, and of course, barns, many of the barns that we see are extremely old buildings. Some of them get to be very decrepit. This is a question from Susan. Are your guests worried that old barns are being taken down just for the barn wood? So many people are making things out of old, beautiful wood. Kelly?
Yes. My own theory about this is that country schools, for example, are receiving more attention in a way and more concern because it seems like there's so many barns still. But we've heard the estimate that, for Iowa anyway, that they're losing 1,000 barns annually.
Wow.
So at that rate, it doesn't take very long. And just from a personal standpoint, we were going to include the barn on the farm that my mom grew up on, and that barn was built around the turn of the last century. Still had a straight roof, had a good roof on it. It was a large, long timber frame barn. We drove past there just a couple of months ago, and it was gone. And it's been sitting there, you know, my entire lifetime. I've seen it sitting along Highway 61 in Wisconsin. And it was very upsetting and disorienting. But we're losing those landmarks.
A lot of farmers, of course, have outgrown those old barns. You can't park a combine in an old wooden barn. So I can understand where, you know, if you're running a business, preserving that building may not be your top priority. Marlon, how do you decide if a barn is worth preserving?
Well, there's a couple of different ways. A lot of times on my investigations of barns, I'm running off the National Register of Historic Places criteria for evaluating these buildings. But that doesn't mean that there aren't adaptive reuses of barns, like wedding barns and storage areas and things like that. But, there are a lot of barns, but they are going down very quickly. The difficulty at some levels is which ones are worth keeping, which ones are worth hanging on to. So you can go a couple different ways. Usually it's local preservation, where people locally really think this is an important landmark for their community. You can go by the National Register criteria, significance of architecture or famous people and past life ways and such. But it all comes down, for the preservation angle of it, to concerned citizens. Now, there's organizations in Iowa for preserving barns especially, and that's extremely important. When it comes down to most barns, it's the individual choice of the landowner. Maybe they want to put that area into production. Maybe, as you said, and you can't put modern equipment in those things, and nor can you rip out their interiors because that's holding up the roof. They're just not designed for that.
Well, and another issue, of course, is money. I live on an acreage. We've got a beautiful old barn, but we started checking into what it would cost to fix up the foundation, and that is really expensive.
Or the roof and the foundation.
I don't even want to talk about the roof.
We don't talk about benign neglect, because neglect is seldom benign on these things. Sometimes they're just in a place of stasis. They're just holding on their own. And there's been a couple barns that I admired for years and driving by, and one, a skeleton barn, because they took all the siding off of it. And I'd be on surveys back and forth. And then one day I went by this barn, and it was just laying flat on the ground. The last nail gave out on it and just collapsed on its own weight. And that's kind of what you see in a lot of essentially abandoned barns in the state.
Well, and we're nearly out of time. Rudy, I want to ask you before we run out of time, what do you want people to see as they drive around and see barns? What do you want them to be able to appreciate about those buildings?
I think that the part about a barn that's different than other buildings is the way that it directly connects us to our past. It connects us to the people that built the barns. It connects us to the natural resources that existed. A lot of people don't realize, but the virgin forest really is not gone. It exists within the early barns. If you want to see the virgin forest, just go into an old barn. And it also connects us to who we were when we settled this country and when we used agriculture to build this great nation. And those buildings are not just icons. They're real physical representations of who we are and how we got here.
Rudy Christian, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Rudy Christian, founding president of Friends of Ohio Barns. Marlon Ingalls, thank you.
Thank you.
Marlon Ingalls, architectural historian and archaeologist with the Office of State Archaeologists in Iowa. And Kelly and Tammy Rundle, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The documentary is The Barn Raisers. It premieres at the Putnam Museum in Davenport on Saturday evening. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.